AIDS remains a tremendous problem in certain parts of the world, particularly sub-Saharan Africa, where although treatment advances have been made, there's still people getting infected, still huge burdens on families and societies and on, you know, the economy and the country as a whole.
And really, as I said, remarkable numbers, almost 33.5 million people around the world with AIDS. Of those, almost 22.5 million just in sub-Sahara Africa alone. Just, I mean, must be just devastating.
That's right. The good news is that with treatment, we are able to extend people's lives now. Whereas in the past, just like in the United States in the early part of the AIDS epidemic, having a diagnosis of HIV infection was led to not much being able to be done to help them. Now we have life-saving treatment that starting people on treatment can extend their lives for many, many, many years. And we're seeing the hospitals that once were full of people waiting for care for HIV infection in Africa now being emptied of the inpatients, and now the outpatient settings where people are getting their drugs and getting their medicines are now able to handle this, and people are going back to their jobs and are living more normal lives.
And you've been working around the world. In fact, you spent 3 years in Thailand. Is that correct?
That's correct. I was very fortunate to have an opportunity to work in Thailand for 3 years, shortly following the demonstration in a clinical trial that a very short course of an antiretroviral drug called AZT could dramatically reduce the chance that a baby would become infected from an HIV-infected mother. Following that trial, the government of Thailand decided that they would scale this intervention up such that all women would have access to an HIV test, and all women who are HIV infected would have access to the drugs that would prevent their child from getting infected. And so I was around for helping provide technical assistance to the government and designing some monitoring and evaluation systems to support that.
Some people don't fully understand the role of the federal government in HIV/AIDS prevention and efforts. Talk a little bit about what's the federal role?
Well, the federal government of the United States has a very important role. Domestically, we fund states to carry out the primary HIV prevention strategies in the United States. Overseas, the federal government is a large funder of the world's overseas AIDS efforts. We're the largest funder of the Global Fund, and through our programs working with countries overseas, we fund HIV prevention, treatment, and care programs. As the federal government, we have, I think, a very special role, both in terms of we are in the United States, we're policy setters, so we help to define and codify the policy. In the international sphere, we represent the United States to the World Health Organization, where we set global policy. We also have a very special federal relationship with the public sector in countries that we're working with. The CDC in particular is a natural partner with ministries of health in other countries, and so we have a government-to-government partnership that is really unique in terms of what can be done from the federal side.
And your job is kind of unique because you have a foot in policy, but also a foot in implementation. Kind of unusual.
Absolutely. I feel blessed to have had a career in which I've been able to both address scientific issues, address policy issues, taking that science and translating that into policy, and then being involved in large programs that would take that policy and apply it to developing programs that can help people. I couldn't have designed a more satisfactory career as a federal employee, and have been blessed to have people that have supported me and have worked with me along the way.
But also at times, I'm sure a challenge, and we've all I've heard of all sorts of folks, implementation folks, the frontline folks who go, you know, the policy folks just don't get what we do, and the policy folks say, yeah, I have all these requirements that I have to get, and therefore that's why we pulled together these kind. Arthur, can you have a foot in both camps? Does it? It seems like a very unique way to translate some of those issues on both sides of those fences.
Not only can you have a foot in both the policy and the program side, as well as the research side, but it's almost essential. You don't want policies that are either not based on good science, such that they're maybe well-intentioned, but not not scientifically shown to be doing what you want them to do. At the same time, you cannot have programs, or you can't design the policy without thinking about, well, how would this be implemented? And you can't have policies that cannot be implemented. So the being familiar with science, with program operations, and then with the way in which policies are developed, which is often, you know, very unique and multifaceted. I think all three of those have to be looking at each other going forward to be effective.
And almost challenging both sides of that fence to think of to walk in somebody else's shoes. What an interesting job!
I can't imagine having a more interesting job than I've had, seeing the science turned into policy and policy turned into practice, but also the opportunity to see many different people and many different parts of this program, from high-level policymakers to people who have benefited from the programs, people who every day are providing frontline care and prevention. It's very rewarding to be able to see and to be involved with taking our taxpayers' dollars and in a responsible way translating that into health improvements of people both in the United States and other countries.
And being able to get that through is part of the reason you're being honored as a Sammy's finalist. And in fact, Brian Wheeler, the deputy director of the Global AIDS Program in Kenya, said of you that you don't come in and say, let's do X or Y. You get people to say why they're here and what they're doing, and then encourage them to really work and talk to one another. That sometimes seems can be a big challenge in government, to get folks to actually talk to one another instead of sort of sitting in their own camps.
I think it's very important for people to talk to each other, and not only talk to each other, but even more importantly, to listen to each other.
Yeah.
When you have a diverse set of people involved in doing something, each person has their own perspective. Often, or almost always, those perspectives are relevant, or else they wouldn't be there. And sometimes our processes go so quickly or move ahead because of the urgency of the moment in ways that don't allow us to listen to key voices, to know that we're doing the right thing from the different perspectives. And so having trying to facilitate the listening process and the consensus building process, knowing that that's not all there is, knowing that decisions get made, sometimes they're arbitrary, sometimes not necessarily turning out to be the right thing, but recognizing that, going as far as we can and bringing together the right voices to any given decision or any given way forward.